Well done, Josie. Thanks for being of service.
Okay, tonight, our main speaker is, please give a warm welcome to Dixie.
I'm Dixie, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dixie.
And I've known about this for a couple weeks now. I was okay with it till the day, and I thought, why did I agree to do this? So, that's a hard act to follow. I mean, that's fantastic. I just love you, Suzanne. So you heard me before, and I don't have a different story, thank God. Don't even, you know, hope I never go back out there. It's not a nice place. I grew up in Sonoma, California, in the wine country, Napa, Sonoma, Mendocino. And it was a small town, like 2,000 people when I was growing up there, and you knew everybody, and if you saw someone you didn't know, you'd find out, you know, where they belong, you know. And we were on a small ranch, and we had a dairy farm, but when I was a year old, my dad left, and then when World War II broke out, my two oldest brothers went to war, and my mother couldn't keep the dairy going, so she sold all the cows. We kept two old ones as pets, Bessie and Dora, and I used to ride Bessie. She was, you know, they were just tame old cows, and but I never really enjoyed ranch life. It's work from morning till go to bed. Never ends. And the only thing I liked about it was being around the animals. I love animals. I still do. I'd have my own zoo if I could. Yeah. But I had my own horse. I had a red cowgirl hat and red boots. And the horse, beautiful sorrel horse, you know, blonde and all that. But he was, my mother had bought him from the Russian River from a trail company. And horses know if you know what you're doing on them. And he knew I didn't know what I was doing. And so I couldn't make him go. But so Mom had to walk and he would follow her. So sold the horse back to the Russian River. So I didn't really want a horse anyway. But, you know, all the little city kids were so jealous of me because, oh, my God, I had a horse, you know. And I was like, big deal. I don't want him, you know. And in part of my writing, doing the steps since then, I wrote about that part of my life. And I ended by saying, and I cried, I would have given anything to have a father at home rather than that horse. You know, I wanted to go with my father. And I didn't like being home. When I went to school, I didn't like being at school. I was not comfortable anywhere. I did not fit in anywhere. At least I didn't think I did. And I think my family was a bunch of atheists. I don't know. I mean, I really do. But I was sent to a Catholic school, which has never made sense to me, because supposedly I'd get a better education. I don't know if I did or not. By this time, my mother had boyfriends hanging around. And, you know, kids, you do anything to fit in. Well, at the Catholic school, you know, one time on Ash Wednesday, I got the ashes on my forehead, and I went home with them. And she and her boyfriend, they laughed at me because I had dirt on my forehead. And thinking back, you know, I think, God, how cruel. You know, why'd they send me there if they're going to make fun of, the religion? But anyway. And I was very much a loner. I was afraid of people. I didn't know how to play with other kids. When I went to school, I was very backwards and afraid. And I didn't know what the nuns were. You know, they walk around with a bunch of penguins and all this black outfit and everything. And the priests even wore, you know, these black robes. And I was never told anything. Nothing was ever explained to me. I was just always out in the dark. And I remember in first grade one day that the nun said, oh, here comes Father. And I thought she meant my father. What is my father doing here? You know, that's how confused I was about the whole thing. Oh, he's a priest. Okay. And I got to go to a regular high school, for which I was very glad. but I was a little backward. I really, yeah, was quite backward. And I had emotional or some kind of blackouts. Even then, I would lose time in class, like a half hour. I timed myself sometimes. I would lose a half hour. I would come out of it. I didn't know what had been going on, what the teacher had said, what the kids were doing, and I didn't want anybody to know, so I would just try it, you know, fit back in. And so my artwork was rather strange. And I don't, you know, I'll never know what that was all about. It doesn't matter now. And I had been allowed to drink a glass, small glass of wine with dinner at home, but that was it. It was controlled. And I didn't crave anymore, but I went to Santa Rosa JC, and it was just no fun living at home and being up there. So I said I would only go back the second year if I could live up there. All right, that's when I broke free, went nuts, and discovered booze and men, and late hours, and the whole works, you know. And I thought it was fun. The first party, college party I went to, someone handed me a tall glass of Thunderbird wine, and I chugged it, and came to on the bathroom floor, and thought it was normal. You know, didn't think about it twice. And the guy I'd gone with, you know, he had a little MG, one of those little red sports cars. And I remember they were, when we were leaving, they were trying to get him to not drive. They were trying to take his keys, and, you know, no way. He got in and drove, and we went flying down the street, Main Street of Santa Rosa, you know, like who knows what time, nobody out. And there's the cops. They took him to jail, and I was drunk too, but they let me drive his car home. And then the kids started telling me that he was alcoholic and he was just off the wagon. I didn't know what they meant. I had no idea. Anyway, that's once I got drunk on that Thunderbird, I craved it after that. Anytime after that I could drink, I just chug until I was out. I would either pass out or black out. And I didn't know what a blackout was. I didn't know what was happening to me until I came here and I learned what a blackout was. And that's what was wrong with me. That's what was happening. And it took a small amount of alcohol to put me into a blackout. I love to drive in blackouts. And as far as I know, I never had wrecks. I never got stopped. I should have. I was living in L.A. I did a lot of geographics. I was living in L.A. I was single. I had a car. And time meant nothing. I would take off, you know. I'd go to a party somewhere, don't know where, get drunk, leave there, and come out of a blackout on some freeway, like maybe 3 a.m. or something. Not know how I got there, how to get home, where I'd been, who didn't know anything. And I would drive a bit and finally find like a service station up or something and find out, you know, how do I get home to Inglewood? And I remember one man saying, "Aren't you afraid, lady?" Nah. Now I'm afraid of dark. but I had no fear then. And, wow. How I held good jobs, I don't know, but I did. I do know that people covered for me. Because towards the end, nobody covered for me, and I was out. But I became a legal secretary down south, and I had very good skills. Emotionally, I didn't match my skills, so it was very hard to get along with people. And, I had office affairs, which don't do it if you work in an office. it's not good. I broke all the rules, and my own personal, whatever you want to call it, I don't know. I had an idea of what was right, and I broke every one of them, you know. It was an awful way to live. It was degrading, it was humiliating, and yet it's like I had to do it. And I would get off work at, well, I'd go to work hungover. I finally bought a wig because I just couldn't even fix my hair. I'd get to work, and God, I was so miserable and hungover. And people, oh, hi, good morning. What'd you watch on TV last night? And blah, blah, blah. I thought, oh, God, leave me alone. You know? And I'd make it till lunchtime, and then I got so finally, I was downtown LA, 7th and Spring, and by then I had to have a drink, and I would go down Spring Street a ways till I found a little out of the way bar where I thought nobody from work would find me, and it wasn't too bad yet, and I would drink my lunch, and then I'd feel better. And one day, one of my coworkers was in there, probably doing the same thing. You know, oh my God, I hope nobody sees me. And about 3 o'clock, you know, I tell myself, okay, today I'm going home. I'm going to be a good girl. I'm not going out. Yeah, you know how long that lasted. And sometimes I would go home, but, you know, it was lonely there. There was nobody there. So I would go back to the bars, and or else finally I just got, so I'd get up at 5 o'clock and head for the bars, always with the intention of eating, but I never made it past the bar. And how I survived all that, I don't know. I really don't know. I wouldn't want to try it again. I wouldn't want to go through it again. And I've had 3 husbands. I feel sorry for the first 2, because I gave them one hell of a ride. I gave them a bad time. My 3rd one, I really tried. I got sober when I was married to him. I really tried to be a good wife and run a nice home and do the right thing. He didn't want me coming to AA, because there were men here. And he said we were having orgies and blah, blah, blah. And I thought, where? I haven't found any yet after all these years. Still not. Anyway, so he started coming to meetings with me. And then we had close ones. It was Paradise, California, up in Butte County above Chico. So he started coming to meetings with me, but then he couldn't beat the close ones. So he said, well, I'm an alcoholic. It's okay. So it was rather not a nice time. And finally, after a meeting one night, he said, you can have me or AA, but you can't have both. I can't live like this. I've got to be first. I said, sorry, I need AA. And I think he was prepared, because the next morning he went and filed for divorce. And we had a very nice home. He had a good job. And I actually liked him. You know, I didn't want a divorce. My God. And anyway, he went through with it. And we divided everything up. We had a little money. We had 2 cars. We had 2 stereos. We had a lot of 2 of everything. We just divided everything up, and I moved out, and he bought me out of the house. And I thought it was a horrible, horrible disaster at the time. I did not want to be divorced. I did not want to be alone. I still didn't think I could take care of myself, even though I was going to AA. I really felt like I really can't make it alone. And I found out through my mainly girlfriends in AA, I can make it alone. I'm okay. And it was slow, and I didn't do everything right at first. I did get a big book, and I have someone to be a sponsor, and I did all that stuff just to, so I could say, yeah, I have a big book, I have a sponsor. Do you read it? No. Do you sponsor? No. But I had them. And I did that for a while. And Paradise was a very small town at that time. It started out as a dirt road, like between, I don't know, Reno or and Chico or something, I don't know. And the old road is still there. It's very interesting to go on. Honey Run Road, that's the name. My brother used to dig bottles out from under the road. I said, it's going to collapse someday. But I had a lot of fun up there. It was beautiful country and nice people, and lived in my mom's house, and my brother and wife lived there a mile away, and she was very nice to me at first, and then she started turning on me, and By 10 in the morning, she had a cup of coffee and a beer. And by night, she was drunk. And she became a horrible person from drinking. And so that's where I fell apart. And I say, I got married the third time up there. And he had grown kids. They were my age. He was quite a bit older. And two of them were alcoholic. One was really bad. He was in our jails. He wrecked cars. He beat people up every time he went out. He had a little boy in the second grade, and the mother had died in a car wreck, and he was trying to raise this little kid drunk and loaded, and we took him for a while. And I really didn't want to raise more kids. Well, I didn't raise my own. What do you mean more? That's my biggest regret in life, too, that I will always, always regret not being able to raise my own children. They are not taken away by court, but they would have been if I'd stayed. I know. So I just left. And at that time, I really felt like everybody would be better off without me. I really felt that way. I felt useless, inferior, just less than a human being. And I took off in the middle of the night from Wichita on a Greyhound bus in a rainstorm, in their flash flooding. And I went to Los Angeles and got lost. And I didn't contact anybody, my family, nobody, for some time. And I found afterwards, you know, that they were pretty upset and looking for me. But I had a P.O. box, and, you know, I didn't want to see anybody. And plus, I was so ashamed of myself, you know. I mean, women just don't do that. And I worked in big offices, and, you know, sometimes there'd be something in the news about a child being abused or left or something, and these other people, oh, that horrible person. I thought, oh, my God, if you knew about me, you wouldn't like me. And it wasn't until I came to AA that I could even talk about my children. Before that, if you said, do you have children? Nope. I changed the subject. I would not talk about it. I was too ashamed and embarrassed. After I was sober a few years, with the help of a man in the program who was a wonderful friend to me and helped me so much, he helped me contact my children. And I can't tell you, I hadn't seen my son since he was 3 years old, and I met him late at night in the Wichita airport. He was 29. He was high and drunk and high. I didn't even care. It was just flesh and blood. I could hold him. And we became, I don't know, wouldn't really say friends, but we wrote back and forth, and I went back there a few times, and he told me he was glad to be able to see me, that it filled a hole in his heart, but he wouldn't quit drinking and drugging. And a year and a few days ago, I called Sarah. I said, my son died, and she came over with a latte. he drank himself to death, literally. He was 55. He had drank and drugged probably every day of his life since he was 12, except when he was locked up. And from what I hear, he gets stuff in jail, too. I don't know. So it was a sad ending, you know. But I really didn't know him. You know, I only saw him when I went back there. So it's just weird. My daughter lives in Estes Park, Colorado. She's been there for a long time. She's gay. I think she's an alcoholic from what I've seen of her. She writes to me when she feels like it, which is fine. It's better than nothing. I'd love to have a relationship with her, but oh well. You guys are my family. You know, this is it. You're it. You're stuck with me. Anyway, it's since I got sober also, I went back to school. I got 2 state licenses, certified nurse assistant and home health aide. And I worked officially for 9 years under those licenses until I got hurt. And I loved it. I didn't know if I could even do it or would want to or anything. I'd never taken care of anybody. And turned out I loved it. I just took right to it. I loved those little old people to death. And after a while, I got my courage and went out on my own. And that's the only way to go. No agencies. You know, they don't pay well. And you got all these stupid rules and regulations. You got bosses. But I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I have pictures of some of my people and their pets, because I got to take care of their pets too. I remember Sheba the dog. She was, oh God, I wish I could have kept her, but I had no place to keep her. My parents have passed on. My mother lived to 97. My grandma, her mom was 100. So I must have some good genes in me to still be this healthy after what I did to myself. You know, I just, a group of us, you know, came in together as newcomers up there in Paradise. And being a small group in small town, we were all very close. And we went to each other's houses. And we had potlucks. And, you know, AA and Al-Anon were friends. They were not enemies, like in some places. And I think that's such a shame when they don't get along. We were all very close. We, you know, we did all this stuff together. And only I didn't quit drinking right away. I would go to the meeting and then go home and drink. But I quit getting drunk, which I thought was a big improvement. I know now it wasn't. You meant don't drink at all. Oh, okay. Anyway, these other newcomers that came in with me, they quit drinking right away. And they were surpassing me, you know. That I could see their lives getting better. And they were looking better. And finally it dawned on me, you know, maybe I should do what they're doing. And so I made a decision to finally quit completely. And I just felt a weight go off me. I just felt so much better. And that's when my husband divorced me. Because he could see the change in me. And he said, you don't need me anymore. And he said, if you really loved me, you'd get sober for me. And I could help you get sober if you just read the Bible with me. Well, I never saw a Bible in the house. We did go to church, you know. But yeah, he was going to fix me. And he resented you strangers fixing me. And I remember not long after going to meetings, and I met one of the people in the market, and my husband was with me, and you know, like we do, we hugged each other. I'm so glad to see each other. He came unglued, just unglued, you know. So, it got to a point where I was sneaking out to meetings from home. You know, I'm going so and so, and then I go to a meeting. And Paradise was small, and there weren't a lot of meetings. And one of them on Saturday night was, it was so neat. It was a lady had a big house and a big backyard with a barbecue pit and trees, and we would have a potluck out there and a barbecue, and then the meeting out there under the stars. It was fantastic. And he finally found it one night. He came tearing up there in his little truck and gets out, and when he was mad, I think he jumped up and down, actually. His face would turn bright red. And he comes over there right in front of me, in front of everybody. Says, this shit's got to stop. You guys stay home. I don't know what I did or how I reacted. I was numb. I just sat there, and they got him to sit down, and we stayed through the meeting. I don't remember a thing. I really don't. And I found out later that they're ready to tackle him if he was going to touch me. So, you know, he didn't like you guys. And but I'm so grateful that I had the whatever it took to keep coming, because I was very afraid to do anything on my own or not do what I was told and all that. So it took a lot of guts for me to keep coming, but I'm so grateful I did. And I could never ever repay what's been given to me in AA. You know, I finally conquered being afraid to be alone. I remember when I got to the point of saying I am okay and believing it and feeling it. It was such a good feeling. So I used to say it, but I didn't believe it. And you know, I had a lot of good jobs, and I always quit before I got fired because I'd go in so hungover. I was so miserable, and you know, it just. I know the steps in the program are extremely important, and don't try to do them alone. You need to do them with a sponsor. They don't make any sense if by yourself. And I tried making amends too soon, and it backfired. Just got in an argument because I didn't know what I was doing. But and I realize now I was trying to make amends to make me feel better, not for the other person. So you know they're numbered for a reason, 1 through 12. And I've done some fourth steps in the program. The last one I did a few years ago was the best one, most thorough one I've ever done. It was through another program, but I had a booklet for it and everything, and did it with two other women. One was a sponsor to the other us. And it's probably time to do another one. I don't know. When the time's right, it'll happen. I know that. I've had some wonderful sponsors. My favorite one up north, I watched her die of cancer. She just, you know, kept getting littler and littler, and nothing left to her. And she wanted me to come see her, though, and I would just sit with her. So don't, you know, don't try to talk. But just sit there. And, you know, I have one down here who's got more sobriety than me, and I use her sometimes, but I also use another person unofficially, more so, a lot more, that I can just talk to about anything, you know, sex, anything. I can't see talking about that with my official sponsor. And today I get to live in the high rise here. That's what brought me down here, was the high rise. I was in Section 8 in San Luis. I was very unhappy there. The place has fallen down around the edges. It was not well organized. They did serve food, but it was yucky. And my girlfriend and I, her mother lived in the high rise, and so we'd come down every week. I came with her, and we'd take her shopping. She'd take us out to eat. And one day my girlfriend said, "Why don't we put our names in there?" I said, "I don't know." I had to think about it. So anyway, I did. And within 3 months, I was in. You know, they say there's a 3-year waiting list, but not always. So I've been very happy there. I feel safe. You can't just walk in. I am very, very careful though when I leave there and walk around here. And I've had some interesting offers. And I just try to ignore them and keep walking. It's Spanish, but I know what they mean. And I mean, age doesn't matter, apparently, because I'm not young anymore. And the main problem with being a so-called old-timer is you're that much older. You know, I've got all these aches and pains now. I'm not sick. I have no illnesses, but I've got all the itises, you know, arthritis, all of them. And most of the time, I'm happy, joyous, and free. If I were that way all the time, there'd be something wrong with me. But I am content most of the time. I love AA. I love you people. I have a good background in Al-Anon also, which helped me greatly. And I've been to other programs too, but AA is the one I've stuck with. And like I say, I love all of you, and I'm grateful to every one of you for being here. That's it.
Thank you.
One more round of applause for our speakers.